Hello. It is May 6th today. The weather has been cool. Recording May 6th. It is May 6th.
Because see, I don't think any of us are perfect. We do make mistakes, but the stories that I've been telling you weren't mistakes, even though when they were stubbornness, they were mulishness, it was something else. It was, I don't know what else to call it. Mm-hmm. So, you have any more questions?
So do you consider your teaching some of your most important work?
Yeah.
What do you consider most important?
The fight with Gosnell Development Company.
Oh, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Somebody's going to do a research paper on that later. But totally humanitarian award of some kind.
No, I haven't heard of it.
The Petra Foundation. And she writes a lot. She analyzes my personality in here. Apparently, it's a foundation in Washington D.C. that honors unsung heroes. You know. People that do things that don't belong to clubs and don't do it because they're councilmen or
politicians. Right.
They do it just because they exist and make certain things happen, mm-hmm. whether they plan it or it's an accident. Or apparently, that's what it is. But anyway, one of the things that she says here is that she calls me an evergreen. Evergreen, and Dora is one of those evergreen individuals who always produces fruit, whether nurtured from without or not. and she goes on like that, very not widely recognized, does not have a strong institutional base of support, has demonstrated capacity to grow even in her advanced age. The last fight we had was about 2 months ago. Has overcome obstacles. It goes on like that, you know. Jeez.
Excuse me.
Huh.
Time.
I know, but I want to finish this one thing. No, what happened? Come here, I want to show you this. Latin American Club of Arizona. But yeah. The point really is that I think what leads this family to do some of these things that mm-hmm. you know, nobody knows about or hears about or the mm-hmm. whole bit is the way we were nurtured in politics.
Now, your father got you into that?
My father and mother and grandfather and great-grandfather.
So it gave you a strong identity as a Mexican-American.
Told us it was a must. And when we were, I think, 14, 13, something like that, we belonged to this club, and our dues were like $5 a month or something, 5 cents a month. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons he wanted us in there, he says, because you're smart. Mm-hmm. Now, that's big stuff for a little kid. We wanted to go places. This club was made up of mostly young and middle-aged people from all over the state. And the purpose of it was to get kids, Mexican-American kids, jobs and education.
Latin American Club of Arizona?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Jobs and education. And that would have been in the 30s that you're in that.
Yeah, in the 30s. And it went on probably, it continued to exist until a LULAC took over, and Luis Corda, the leader, he was a very powerful leader, a very charismatic man. He used to spend a lot of time in our house. Mm-hmm. He traveled a lot. He went everywhere, and he knew, he was a good politician. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about partisan politics, I'm kind of talking about politics of conscience or something, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. But he just filled everybody that he touched with a spirit that you could do things.
That you could do things, you could make something.
That's why
happen.
We were at that convention. We had no business there. We weren't even 18. Mm-hmm. And we were voting for a statewide endorsement of governors, and I don't know what all, in the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. And my sister and I and about four others objected to the nominee. Who knows why? We didn't want him. So when they called for the votes, we stood up, no. We ran to our rooms and locked the door. Children. Well, okay. So the reason I bring it up is because I think that uh-huh. that spirit, that feeling uh-huh. that you can do and you should do and somebody must do or they'll do it to you, pay attention, you know. That I think made all of us push in that direction a little bit. So we became participants and activists in a lot of little causes. Mm-hmm. And the only one that I can think of that I really took dangerous leadership was the Gosnell fight, because that one, to this day, is having repercussions. I got a phone call last week about a guy that's doing research on it, and he started getting threatening calls already.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awful. Mm-hmm. But the reason that I say that I took leadership in it is because I was up in Payson at the cabin and returned to Phoenix. This was in 1981, I believe. No, 80. Must have been 85. And had a phone call. I was a member of what they called a Phoenix Village Planning Committee. The city was subdivided in neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So I was in South Phoenix, and one of these women that belonged to that group called me, and she said, Gosnell is going to... Do you know that story at all?
Yeah.
Well, then I don't
have
to detail. Anyway, Gosnell is going to do this, and nobody's going to stop him and all that stuff. And she had gotten details that he was going to present this plan before the city council on a certain day. Well, I've been out of town. So anyway, I rounded up people for meetings, and from then, this was in November, right after Thanksgiving, from then until we filed an injunction, I think in March, I and my family found a lawyer free, found about five lawyers free, and found we didn't find him, but our lawyers found a cash supporter that would give, I think, $10,000, what he gave, to help us get started. Another friend of ours that we've known from college days and his wife, they got the volunteers to sign the injunction court of application, and that included the leadership in the Senate and the leadership in the House.
Wow.
Art Hamilton and Alfredo Gutierrez and Dusty Hatfield signed that thing. Anyway, the Phoenix Preservation Council said no to me many times. No, we will not help you. No, we will not. No, we will not. No, we will not. And their pitch, beginning with Dottie Gilbert, anyway, there were about three or four leaders up there, I called both out, because we have just formed such a good relationship with the politicians downtown, city council, and we don't want to endanger that. We worked too long to get where we are, and we don't want this, and we don't want that. Well, I went to a city council meeting. I made my speech. I didn't know a soul in there. It was jammed. There must have been 1,000 people in. And that, right after me, came this lawyer, Simpson Cox, and he made his presentation. And when I saw him, I thought, the lights went on, you know. He can help me. So anyway, then I made an appointment, went to see him, and we started planning. And he says, you know that I've been waiting for you to appear. That's the way the band started. For 6 months, the North Phoenix Preservation Council would not help us. No way. And when they started helping us, it's because I guess they figured it was a serious thing. That thing ended up in Washington, that problem ended up in Washington, D.C. in Ed Meese's office.
Hmm.
That's how high it went. It went to all those, it was, and like I tell you, this guy is doing research on it, on the cemetery end of it. Gosnell buried some bodies over there and put a building over them, I should say. The Yaquis buried some bodies from Guadalupe years ago, 1900. Whenever it was, and he built an apartment building over him and claims that he moved the bodies.
Mm.
And there's a doubt. That's the research. And you know what that's going to involve. That's going to involve all kinds of state agencies. They have to give supportive documents that they did or didn't do something.
Right.
Well, anyway, that's why he's getting threatening calls.
Oh, wow.
And so when he called me recently, it's nobody that I know, I never heard of him, he said... I told him, I said, you better go see a lawyer before you get another phone call. He says, I already have. I had mentioned in my conversation the name of a certain lawyer. He'd already made an appointment. It's very serious.
Wow.
But we did, that was a very important campaign.
That was successful.
Very, very, very important campaign. We didn't get all we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want that man around at all.
Is that when he built the point at South Park?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the point took some of that land.
The golf course.
And the golf course. Okay.
The point was already built. I mean, a lot of the housing was already built, but it was the golf course he wanted. He wanted like 1,000 acres of parkland mountain. And that was the fight. He had just been turned down at Thunderbird near Squaw Peak. The Thunderbird Country Club crowd, they used to have annual golf tournaments, and since then they've gone to move to Scottsdale. But he wanted to build that same scenario by Squaw Peak, and the North Mountain Preservation Council wouldn't let him. I mean, you know, politics on it. Anyway, they won. He lost. So what did he do? He came down to South Mountain. And I guess they thought that, you know, we didn't have any moxie at all. And we didn't. We just had, it got, the things got so bad that churches would let us put our petition tables inside their, right outside their front door. But no church let us do that, that was, say, north of Thomas Road. And the other thing that happened is that the Jefferson Street Courthouse, that county courthouse on 3rd and Jefferson, is supposed to be a non-political area. And, of course, this was all publicized, you know. In fact, I deliberately used to call this one and that one so something would get printed. So it was out in the public domain that we were getting attacked, and our petition signers were being attacked. And so I called the manager of the facility there on Jefferson and 3rd, and talked to him. I said, you know, we want to put petition tables in your building. He said, no way. That case may end up in court, and then we'd be in conflict. So anyway, we kept on talking, and then I called two or three politician friends that I had, and they encouraged him. In fact, one that was on the board of supervisors at the time, they encouraged him to consider it because we were in danger. And you know, he let us. He let us put a petition table at every entrance to that building, and he got the sheriff's department to help us, to help keep us safe. Yeah, it was a very. So I do hope this fellow does do good research. I have a lot of. I'm going to take it all over to the Hayden Library. I have
a lot of documents.
About that thick of news accounts, but also I have a drawer like that with court documents.
That's great that you've saved all that.
Yeah, that was a significant thing, but the major, I think the one that makes me feel the best is what we've been able to do in the last 10 years for Mexican Americans of the future. We have been working real hard on family history. Okay, it is said that if it isn't written, it didn't happen. Well, that's fine. But what we want is we would like it to be an example to other people. Do this. You know, some of you, if you're 2,000 of you out there, maybe 10 of you there can, you know, find the energy to do this.
I can see that your focus is on that.
That's what we're doing. And when we moved to Wickenburg, I was a member of the board of trustees at the Phoenix Museum, City Museum. And then they invited me here to be on that board. And what we've been able to do, Alice and I worked real good on this. We really complement each other. What we were able to do is we developed a little organization to take oral histories.
Oh, great.
It lasted a couple of years. And it was a very formally done little organization. And then that resulted, that and other things that the museum was working on. Plus, we created a fund for one of my deceased aunts to honor her, to be used in a certain way with having to do with Mexican American history here. Because the previous book that was done by the museum said they couldn't find any Mexican American history. So that's why there wasn't any in that book. Well, we've done a book. I guess, I don't know if you've seen it.
Mark
Price book. Mm-hmm. And we've done a book, and now we've done the play. And that about, I think if it lasted 2.5 hours, the second act was all minority representing. There's a black woman and her history, and then 3 or 4 Mexican American history skits. My father and mother were in one of them.
Great, neat.
You know, And there's a lot of original Mexican music of the period.
Great. I think I talked to the woman when she was starting to organize that. Because I do work as a consultant.
Cheryl Taylor.
Yeah, yeah, I remember she told
it was
me.
It was a huge success. They sold out both nights. And they had to turn people away.
That's great.
But anyway, that's the... We have used our own little uneducated, uninformed ways to put pressure on certain places mm-hmm. that will produce what we think should be produced. Mm-hmm. And this museum has been in existence 25, 30 years, and to this day, I mean, till last year, they didn't represent the Mexican-American history at all. And our goal really is to show them they must produce a permanent exhibit. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there has to be a Chinese one here and a Mexican one here and a white one here and an Indian one there. Mm-hmm. They can work it out. Mm-hmm. You know, this happened and then that happened and then this happened. Mm-hmm. And in all these happenings, kinds of people were involved. If you know their names, use them.
Yeah, right.
You know, sure. So I think that I should come to an end.
Well, it's too bad that we're trying to do